Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello everyone, welcome to part two of the Stompcast. Emma and I are wandering in the quiet garden of Kennington Park because it was a bit loud and noisy.
A little bit loud, yeah.
There's lots of people riding motorbikes around and revving and doing different things. We found a nice peaceful spot for you all, which hopefully is gentle on your ears.
The Kennington Flower Garden.
Kennington Flower Garden, which I shall return to in the summer. Mm-hmm. My HQ used to be around here, so I did used to wander down and play tennis in the courts there a few times.
We're very
lucky to have these green spaces in the middle of what is a very big city, really.
It's nice
to have the space. Okay, shall we delve into...
Okay.
What am I? Am I a rock? Am I a gladiator? A hustler? Am I a bridge? Let's have some fun.
I wouldn't be a therapist if I didn't say... What do you think?
Of course. So I guess listening to it, I wouldn't say that I am a bridge. I think we can rule that one out.
Do you know why?
I would say because I have a very strong feelings about things and I often will stand up for what I think is right or the right thing, and I'll do that even if it means it's going to be more difficult. So I'd say I take often the path of most resistance at times.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. The only reason I ask is because there is something... Remember I said in the last episode that I found it really difficult to name this one? And one of the names I was playing with was The Diplomat. And there is something about the way you present that has that ability to have those strong opinions and communicate them diplomatically. So that's just something to be curious about.
I think that's fair, and I think probably if you're going to ask me what I believe my greatest strength is, I'd say there's two things, which is really annoying. I'd say first, I think it's my I feel things very strongly, my empathy for others, or if I feel something is wrong or right, I feel it incredibly strongly, which means I feel a lot of pain for things. If there's a wrongdoing in the world, for example, but I also get this incredible drive from my empathy. So I think that's one of my strengths. And the other strength is that I think, on the whole, that I'm a good communicator. Like if I work in Lewisham Hospital with people from who are from a low socioeconomic background, I can really connect with them. I feel I feel that I can really connect, can talk to them, I can hopefully make them feel comfortable to share what's going on and try and help them, say, with an illness, whatever. I can also work with, the Prime Minister, or I can go and talk to Prince William, and I think, communicate and negotiate, like with the campaigning, the mental health, I'm negotiating often with Eton trained people about politics. So I think that is what I would say my communication is strong. Don't always get it right. Impatience and sometimes impulsivity can be a challenge in my communication. But I think that's what I would
say. Okay, that's really interesting. So what do you think your greatest weakness is?
I think if you can ask me, well, what do I think my greatest weakness is towards myself, not towards others, as if I was going to really be like, is this question putting me right at the centre of it?
However you want to answer.
I think my greatest weakness probably is that I worry a lot, and I have a very strong inner self-critic, and I worry a lot. And I think the combination of things, although is very useful for action and for change, puts me at a more vulnerable state personally. Yeah. But also I think it can create instability for people around me as well, because I'm always trying to preempt the next issue or probably deal with the current issue or actually taking on more, which creates more issues. So that is probably, I would say, it. That or my impulsivity. My impulsivity, so within the ADHD stuff, my attention side isn't the issue. It's not been a problem for me. I worked in A&E, the attention's great, one thing to the next, perfect for A&E. My career now is just like everything, attention, different things, is perfect. You wouldn't want it differently. But my impulsivity has got me into really difficult financial situations in the past, personal situations, taking on things that I shouldn't, being like, yeah, go on, let's do this. Mm. Yeah, I'll put my name next to that and try and help with that when I don't have the capacity to do it. And that has been that's a huge weakness, which I actually have worked on since I was diagnosed with ADHD. That is something I have aggressively dealt with.
Okay, how?
24-hour rule on little decisions, seven-day rule on medium decisions, one-month rule on long-term decisions. And I also ask lots of other people what they think.
Okay, that's really interesting.
And so I get that kind of dilutional effect of decisions. Like, it's like, if there's quite a few people saying, I think that's a bit impulsive or risky, then I'm like, okay, fine.
Yeah. So if I was going to diagnose your blind spot...
Yeah, go on then.
I would have had you down. Bearing in mind, we've chatted for an hour.
Yeah.
I've seen you on Love Island.
Mm-hmm.
I've read your books. I followed you on social media. So what the fuck do I know, is what I would say.
I think a fair bit, but yeah.
But I would have put you down as... And I don't think this is necessarily one or the other. I think there's a kind of rock hustler, a rustler, if you will.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought you'd say, and that's also what I thought.
Yeah, because what happens when the hustler gets overwhelmed is you pull back to rules... 24-hour rule, 7-day rule, and the rigidity supports that chaos. So your tension is between control and chaos, and you use rock and hustler to buffer you. The problem we see with ADHD so often is it just swings between the two like a pendulum. And so neither one gets to really bring its strengths into the situation. It's like, okay, now I've over-controlled myself as... I can't over-control anymore. Oh, now I've become impulsive again. When that gets too big, I come back to rigid. That's why I think it's kind of really interesting, this idea of perspective, because my blind spot work isn't about saying, okay, that's your profile, on you go. It's saying the strengths that are within each of those profiles, when you bring all four strengths together, which I talk about as control in a rock, confidence in a gladiator, creativity in a hustler, and cooperation in a bridge, when you bring them together you get perspective, and that's your best place to make a decision.
So you want to actually be a combination of all four.
You want all four.
It's really interesting because when I think about it, so I grew up in a house where I was the oldest brother, parents that I think were, you know, relatively, you know, traditional in terms of parenting, not extremely strict, but I'd say probably more on the strict side compared to today's kind of standards. Parents that had quite high expectations of me. I probably rebelled against that somewhat.
You rebel?
I think I just had I thought I knew best when I was younger. I would just do my best, but then I also did really want to please them, so part of that. But I think throughout my life as well, there's been quite a few knockbacks, and I think there's things, and I wonder how much PTSD affects these things, because I was talking to the guys before about it, is that I had a scan a little while ago, a couple of weeks ago, and it was looking at, it was like EEG, looking at the electrical impulses in my brain, the imaging for impulses of the brain. And I've got what I was told is a post-PTSD brain. So brain is recovering from, or was mostly recovered from PTSD. And I think we all have experiences, and I think certainly I've had quite a few, I think, traumas in my life. And I lost one of my best friends at uni to leukemia. I had, you know, I've seen some pretty traumatic stuff in Lewisham even before, Kings, before the pandemic. I mean, just working as an AE doctor is carnage. The stuff you see in an inner city is some of the things I couldn't even repeat. And then you add on, Love Island is a trauma. And it's not even a bad trauma, actually. It's just a big experience, so that's traumatising itself. And then you add, pandemic and my brother and becoming an ambassador for mental health was, definitely a trauma, you know. I wonder how much does trauma play into these. So if anyone listening as well, I think, actually there's lots of things that I've had happen, and how does that play into
I think that's such a great observation. And as with, you know, trauma, whether it's with a capital T or a small t, these events, the main thing they do is kind of bring you away from that prefrontal, cortical, empathetic, flexible processing, and they bring you back to a kind of survival script. And if you think about blind spots being formed often in early age, reinforced by all the experiences that we then have, self-fulfilling prophecies, if you go through trauma, you're going to dig in and entrench into that original blind spot, which is why when push comes to shove for me, I will go back to rock.
So you go back. So if so, something happens, something, you know, there's that phone call, something bad's happened.
If
you're like,
bereavement,
bam, I need to sort this out. Shoulders
absolutely,
back.
Totally. And that is the chin down, helmet on, walk forwards.
Yeah, just like, go. And then I feel like the hustle comes in for me at a later date. It's almost like, so when the pandemic started, I was like, right, come on, let's do this. Roll your sleeves up, go in, straight into literally the carnage.
Yeah.
And you're just like, bam, almost like, you've just like put the emotions away. No, we're smashing this.
And yet,
and then the hustling comes later almost.
But you can do both. And that's what I think is so interesting. And you do both. So you have that kind of core that means that you have a resilience you can depend upon. And you can be creative. So you can go back into that A&E department in that example, roll your sleeves up, put the emotions away, but be creative and be challenging as opposed to be rigid and pull back to safety.
So I guess my next question, I guess, would be for, and I hope it's been a useful case for people listening. I'm not trying to, this podcast is not about me, funny enough, but I hope it's been useful hearing both your experience and what and who you think you are, and my case example. But you know, people listening will obviously relate to different parts of those or combination of those, and maybe even different combinations to the one we talked about. Why, like, some of it has come through in what you've already said, but why does it really matter which you are? And could people say, well, actually, kind of works. It kind of works me being the rock. I don't. I need to change it? Maybe we'll start with that before we think of how. Let's just think about that. Like, how do you know if it's a problem almost?
Well, I suppose it's the answer would be that when clients come to me in therapy, I don't diagnose them. I don't pathologize their mental health. I just say, is it getting in your way? If it's not getting in your way, crack on. But for most people, there will be that kind of nagging voice that says, I kind of wish things were a bit easier for me, or, you know, I would like to feel more fulfilled at work, or it would be great if I felt more like a kind of an equal in my friendship group, or wouldn't it be nice if I didn't always feel on the back foot in my relationships and I didn't kind of get insecure. So it's, if there is something that you think isn't working for you, why not get curious about it? I think it was such a kind of mistake when we were told that what you don't know won't hurt you. I think it couldn't be further from the truth.
What you don't know is already hurting
you. It is hurting you.
That's already the point.
It's already hurt you.
And actually, good? Did that back up your point there?
Yes, thank you. Plus, what
get rid of Elizabeth Day on your therapy. You can tell I love Elizabeth. Get rid of her, though, and I'll come. And
she's gone.
Just be a lovely, we'll be a lovely threesome.
There you go.
We'll be the three of us.
She's also a hustler, so... She's a bristle. Actually a bristle.
Okay, yeah.
She's a hustler bridge.
Cambridge, yeah. Do you know what? Now that you say that, I absolutely can.
You recognise it,
I can
don't
see
you?
That. I mean, you'd know a lot better. But yes, I can kind of see that. So effectively, there's no harm in someone learning about it on the off chance that perhaps there is something that you could do differently and perhaps you could feel a bit better. And I do often think as well that it's almost like when you ask yourself, like, am I depressed? Am I okay? Am I happy?
Yeah.
And when you're asking yourself like that, it's like what I often say to me, like, Alex, how do I know when I need to get help? You've answered your question.
Yeah.
If you're asking someone, how unwell do I need to be, or how do I know if I need help? I can already tell you.
I know.
Should go and ask for help.
I know.
I don't need to know anymore because there's something inside you that doesn't feel right or wants to have support.
Yeah.
And you're just looking for something to validate, which is understandable. We all do it to validate that.
Yeah. Tune into that.
So, obviously, they should read. Everyone should read. What am I missing?
What a great idea.
What would you say then in terms of like a bit of how to? How could someone, you know, obviously, have, you know, genuinely have a read of the book, but someone, you know, for someone listening right now, how could you start to think about adapting? Obviously, I guess it depends on which type you are, but what can you do?
You know, one of the things I think you can do is look around you at the people that you've chosen to be in your life. And I say that specifically thinking about romantic relationships because I do a lot of work with couples, and couples will come to me, and at the point they come to couples counselling, typically things aren't going so well. But what we tend to find out is that the other person had something that they needed, that they were missing at the point. That was why they got together. But the thing that brought them together is often the thing that then splits them up. Why I find that interesting in this context is you've probably got people around you who are different profiles to you. And rather than notice that difference, see if you can actually integrate some of the permissions they give themselves. So let's say in your example, maybe there's a gladiator out there who you see working and they just lead with their ideas. They don't suffer fools. They don't sacrifice their priorities. They have a courage of their convictions that you look at and you think, wow, you really make yourself important.
I've really got someone in my mind.
Oh, I can't say who it is. Please tell us who it is.
I can't.
Please.
It's someone I know. But they just vividly, like as you describe, vividly. So, and it will be. I'm sure everyone listening, you've all got a vivid image. I'm certain you'll have it in your mind of someone.
And it's the person who, rather than project against them and say, well, I wouldn't like to do that. Oh, I don't think that's okay. It's recognising that actually, if I took just a leaf out of their book, not the whole tomb, but just a leaf, to say, actually, is there something I could learn from the way this person lives their life? In the same way as if you're a gladiator, look at the bridges in your life and notice how they make connections. Notice how they listen more than they speak. Practice it, see what happens, because there's a big difference between, this is a definition of discipline I love, what you want now and what you want most. That's the definition of discipline, right? So this is what I want
that's
now.
That's so good.
What I want most.
We need that for our Vox Pop guys. That's nice to go down.
Take a gladiator. What they want now is things exactly the way they want them, done now, done exactly to their liking. What they want most might be to create relationships that can be greater than the sum of their parts. To actually get to a point where they're able to build teams around them and feel supported by and feel able to trust others. But they're going to have to give up what they want now to get what they want most. So I would say people get curious about discipline. Do you know what you want now? Do you know what you want most?
I think that's so good. I think that's so brilliant. It does actually relate to most habit forming anyway, doesn't it?
It's kind 100%.
Of like, and all, like, kind of like, I want to have connections in my life, but also, but right now I feel like just staying inside and not going out. But if I don't go out, I'm not going to get what I want in the future. I have to actually go out and do the thing that I'm less comfortable doing right now, but to achieve the greater goal.
And you can flip it as well. So for me, I love that definition of discipline. I use it for myself all the time. So take the example of gets to the end of the evening, I've got the kids to bed, the homework's done, the bags are packed, the uniform's out, the dogs are walked, I'm packing up the house, the kitchen's a mess. What I want now is to go up to bed. What I want most is to come down to a clean and tidy kitchen. But I stop myself there and I say, no, Emma, that's your rock speaking. Actually, what you want now in this moment of stress is to have order in your life by way of a clean and tidy kitchen. What you want most is to live freely and fully and be able to come down to the morning of a kitchen with a bit of chaos in it and that be okay. So I had to challenge my blind spot by flipping discipline.
Makes me feel really uncomfortable for
that
kitchen
remaining
messy.
I know. And that's why you have to do it. Because that inner rock
Do we have to do the kitchen one?
You have to do the kitchen
one. When you come down in the morning, does it hurt you a little
bit? It does hurt me a little bit. And then I think, then there must have been some benefit to that. Right now, I'll quickly tidy it all up.
Yeah, I love that. You probably do you come down a little bit earlier than you would have already come down?
Ever so slightly early, yeah.
Ever so slightly earlier than you wanted to, just to have it.
I'll send my husband down.
I'd be twitching. My foot would be twitching in the night. I'd be like, I need to go and to kind of sort that out. Is that something interesting too? How much does that play into it? Things like order among order and chaos? How much does that play into it? Because I always find it interesting in my own life that my life is actually very chaotic, but I really like order.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make a great deal of sense. Like in A&E, like I like to like order the chaos almost, but I do actually want the chaos.
Yeah.
But I don't want to feel like I don't have control or order.
Well, we need both. And you know, people have different opinions about the work of Jordan Peterson, but one of the things that he talks about, which I love, is the relationship between order and chaos being like yin yang. And he talks about these black and white headed serpents, that each one of the serpents in a yin yang sign has a dot of the other color as its eye. And he says that in nature, in life, we need to have some chaos within control and we need to have some control within chaos. And it's only a kind of balanced relationship between the two that's going to serve us. So you might think your life is chaos. Chaos might be an example of, my podcast is a stomp cast. I go out, I walk, I'm in nature. But you bring order into it by putting certain parameters around the way you record. You've taken us laps of a park that have felt calm and safe and contained in order to be able to also breathe into the chaos and the creativity. So yeah, I think balance is really the key.
You can't have. And actually, when I think about it, when my life is going through a time where it is very just calm and there's no kind of sense of bit of risk within it, I then seek out
you'll have to.
The chaos. But then when, like at the moment, it feels all a bit too chaotic in some ways, I want to move towards calm.
That's right.
But I don't want too much calm.
No, calm's a great word. And I think calm is a better word than control, because it's where, for instance, I would see something like eating disorders or addiction come in. It's when people are out of kilter with what calm looks like. And so they're actually veering between control and chaos. So they put the rules in around food. That creates something that looks like control, but it's nowhere near calm. Somebody leans into addiction to create some chaos, nowhere near actual freedom.
That is actually a brilliant example. It's like we perceive that we're having something, but actually what it looks like is very different.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's right. These are all synthesized experiences for the actual secure attachment that we're yearning for.
We had Dr. Ian Jordan, who's a psychiatrist, on my podcast we recorded actually the other week, and he was talking about how, like, our behaviours, it's a good way to look at whether your behaviour is, like, helping you or hindering you.
Yeah.
It's like, are you moving towards something that is bettering your life and something that you want, or is your action moving away, or you're moving, you know, away from it? So it's like the example that we use is like around like alcohol, like are you moving towards a more social life, drinking and you're just having a couple of drinks, enjoy the friend, fine.
Yeah.
Or are you drinking to numb pain,
where
you're moving away from something that you actually need to move towards and sort.
Absolutely.
I quite like that. Like, maybe that's a similar thought. We think we're moving towards calm, but actually the control doesn't equate to the calmness we think we're having, or
that's
we
right.
want to have like a life that has a bit of fun and risk, but perhaps it's not in a way that we actually wanted.
No, and that's a really good example of what I see in gladiators a lot, is that they believe themselves to be free spirits, but often their behaviour actually creates recklessness.
Mm.
And by the time they end up in therapy, bearing in mind they come less frequently maybe than the other profiles, it's because the wheels have come off. And at that point now, it's damage control. You know, they've been exited from their company for gross misconduct, or they've had an affair and their marriage has imploded. And it's only at that point that they realise what they thought they were doing in a sense of free will really was reckless behaviour, endangerment.
Mm. Mm. And do you think that there is a gender lean towards these things? Like, do you think that, like, the gladiators, do they tend to be men more? Is that stereotypical? We use the example of the gladiator
as a
man. Is that a stereotype? Is that something? Do you see that
I mean, the reality is that, yes, more gladiators that I see are men, which doesn't mean that I don't see plenty of gladiators who are women.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I do. And throughout the book, I use case studies to bring the profiles to life, and you'll notice how diverse actually the profiles can be in terms of how they're represented. But I do see, again, these are generalizations that I make with these caveats, but there are narcissistic traits within a gladiator. Typically there are greater prevalence of narcissistic traits in males, so we kind of get these overlaps, which is not to say all gladiators are narcissists, but narcissists are typically gladiators.
I see. So if one was a narcissist, they would more like to be a gladiator than perhaps someone who was a bridge.
Absolutely. I don't think I've ever met a narcissistic bridge, but I have met narcissistic gladiators dressed up in hustler's clothing.
I see. But are those people aware that they're doing that?
No one's aware. I think that's what's so important, isn't it?
That's the point of the blind
spot. Is unconscious bias. We don't even know we're doing it.
So can someone who is a gladiator who is being destructive and whatever, and perhaps we're demonising gladiators a bit at the moment, we don't mean to be, but say that they are being destructive, mm-hmm. can someone move away from that and not be like that?
Completely. I've seen it happen time and time again. I'm not sure that it can happen all by itself, but certainly the gladiators who've come to me through therapy, and when we talk about them being destructive, they're primarily self-destructive. Typically, they've been raised in situations where they've either had way too much kind of adoration and nurture or far too little, and actually it's been a hypercritical environment for them to grow up in. So they haven't learned how to develop empathy themselves. They haven't learned how to trust others. Their life gets so much richer and more intentional and more fulfilling when they learn how to have intimate relationships with other people.
And so with the kind of destructive behaviours, is there a typical pattern that you see? You mentioned a few, say, relationships and stuff, but is there a typical pattern? And what usually is the thing, because you're saying that they don't often want to come in, what is the thing that usually does make them come and see a therapist or come see you, whatever?
Crisis, like a deep crisis where they're no longer able to get by with what they've got. So it could be that, if I think actually... I scan my client history and my mind 10,000 client hours, but I can still picture my gladiators. Mm-hmm. Because I had a gladiator who, any boundary I created, he would break. Any time boundary, any payment boundary, he would come and he would plug his electric bike into the socket in my consulting room. Everything was about how can I have the power in this room.
Gosh, that makes me feel so, I couldn't in a million years do that.
But what's great about being a therapist is you just go, huh, I'm really curious about the fact that you've plugged your electric bike
into my consulting room. And are they unaware that they're taking liberties effectively?
Well, are they taking liberties or are they looking to see if this is a safe place with boundaries? I mean, they're expecting to be perceived by the world as taking liberties. Mm. It's a therapist's job to look beyond that and say, tell me what that's about for you. What's your expectation? How do you think I'm going to perceive that? Well, I don't care how you perceive it. Okay, tell me what that's like for you, not caring how I perceive it. All of this is just grist for the mill. But you asked me about how do they end up. He ended up because he was an alcoholic. His wife had kicked him out. It's often a I've been done to story when a gladiator comes to therapy. There have been lots of marital situations where a gladiator has come in with their hustler or their bridge partner on the brink of collapse. That's the only reason they're there. We actually often end up doing way more work with them because the hustler and the bridge are already more self-aware. They are more neurotic in the kind of literal sense of the word. They're more aware of themselves and others. Gladiators typically don't know that they don't operate in this way, so they think they're fine. They're quite open to hearing that things could be easier. It's not simple being a gladiator by any stretch.
It's really interesting, isn't it? So, like, human beings, aren't they just, like, the way that we are is so interesting.
I love them.
We said funny things, brains, but it is, isn't it?
I know.
It's so odd. How can, like, there's so many people in the world and we all just so have, I guess these are patterns we're talking about, but everyone's experience is different and yet we see these similar patterns come through.
I think it's
bizarre.
The thing that I find most bizarre is, as a parent, seeing my two kids grow up, and having written this work on blind spots, it's taken me maybe the last 2 or 3 years to really develop the theory, and actually noticing them make their little adaptations in the world as well.
So yeah, how old are your children, and do you notice patterns?
Yeah,
those patterns?
Completely. My son's 13, my daughter's 10. I notice these kind of the different ways, and I love watching it. Obviously, it's like the main observational study for me, isn't it? But I'll listen to my son gaming with his mates upstairs and I'll hear one adaptation, and then he'll come downstairs and be all kind of like snuggly and affectionate with me, and there's a different adaptation, and then the way he is with his dad and the way he's with his granddad. And it's fascinating because he's 13. He's literally trying on all of these
outfits, basically.
Yeah, he's on Fortnite buying skins and trying his own skins on all the time. And you just see him trying to figure out his world. My 10-year-old, she is... I kind of sometimes have to watch her a little bit because she is so attuned to other people that I sometimes, and this is the kind of, this is the cross all parents bear, right, is that we project our fears onto our kids, but sometimes I think, oh no, am I raising a rock? Because she's there and she'll be the one that kind of takes things on and sort things out and feeds the dogs, and she'll come and kind of offer words of comfort to her friends and family. But right now, I think she's just gorgeous. She's doing it because she loves people and the world. But for me, the whole, the beginning was wanting to become a vet, wanting to be actually a pediatrician or a vet, watching so many operations in my dad's surgery and realizing that I could not stay conscious at the sight of blood. Mm-hmm. And when I went to have hypnotherapy about it, because I was pregnant with my son, and my fear was that at some point in his life, he would need his mother to stay conscious and he'd be bleeding out somewhere. I had hypnotherapy and the hypnotherapist worked completely on my empathy and said, we need to dial your empathy down. Mm-hmm. You can't experience this as if it's happening to you.
But don't you find it interesting that in the perspective that you're
completely
a rock?
Completely. That's the whole thing, isn't it?
Interestingly, you're worried about not being able to be the rock.
Precisely.
Which is in itself a...
That's the thing. And that's why I think it's fascinating for you, who... at times in your life might need to be more gladiator, but it's going to really struggle to do that because of the level of empathy that's baked in.
Mm. Although does being a rock help you, if you have that rock element, does that help you transcend to being a gladiator at times when you need to?
I'm a gladiator on my children's behalf. That's what I notice. Mm. When I'm in a situation and someone has slighted my child, then I notice it's like all empathy is off.
Is it off the
ground? Yeah, that's it. I'm coming for you.
So I guess we all perhaps have moments where we need to be the gladiator.
I think we do. That's the whole point, right? We need to have a blend. We need to have perspective.
Right, well, we're going to go into part three now. So I'll say goodbye to you all and hopefully welcome you back to part three very shortly, where we're going to really focus on more of these actionable tips, like how can we take it further? So you're noticing, looking around you, seeing, you know, and trialing some of these different ways of being, perhaps thinking of example of your son who's trying the different Fortnite
skins
on, and as to how we can kind of develop that further. We're also going to be really delving into something that I really want to talk to you about, which is toxic relationships, toxic behaviours. How can you recognise them in yourselves and others? Because I think this does actually attach quite a bit to what we've already talked about.
Okay, so sounds
great. Makes a bit of sense to me. All right, we'll see you all in part three very soon. Goodbye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.